Case number 22-3856, Troy Montefel versus HMS Host Toll Roads Incorporated. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Timmers, you may proceed for the appellant.
Before I begin, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Tom Timmers, and I represent the appellant, Troy Montefel, in this case. We're here on a case that ultimately boiled down to a single issue. Was the appellant, Troy Montefel, an exempt employee under the Fair Labor Standards Act? Now, Troy was the district director of operations for HMS Host, a company that runs, among other things, the plazas at the Turnpike. And Troy's job title, district director of operations, sure sounds like he should have been exempt. When you look at his job description on paper, you come to the same conclusion. So the question becomes, why are we here? We're here because that job title was a lie. The job description was a lie.
How about what he said in his deposition that he did? Was he lying in his deposition?
During his deposition, he noted a number of things. He absolutely did perform some managerial tasks. He had some authority, very limited authority. It was largely denuded by both human resources and his direct supervisor. He had some supervisory authority.
You know what, just doesn't seem to even pass the smell test here, is this guy's making, I think it was $75,000, right?
It's something in that range, yes.
The people that he is equating himself to as non-executives were, if I remember right, hourly employees that were probably making $20,000 or $30,000. Why was he being paid $75,000 if it wasn't for his management duties, unless Host is really, really stupid?
Well, I can't opine on that last issue, but it would be a combination of, as he noted during his deposition and during some of the testimony, is it was a lack of staffing available. They had a budget where they could only have X number of employee hours available, and once they hit that budget, they still had staffing requirements that they had to meet, and so once they run out of hourly staff, they can pay hourly under their budget. It was the assistant managers, it was the managers, it was the district director of operations that all had to step into these roles to handle the hourly tasks.
Your client's position is not that he wasn't performing the job duties listed in his written job description. Is that right?
Correct. He was performing those duties identified, but not with the authority that he should have had as a true exempt employee.
What sort of authority? I'm just looking at one. Coach managers on administrative duties. What sort of authority did he not have as it relates to that?
He absolutely had the ability to coach people, but what he was coaching came from above. How he was to do it came from above. He was a middle manager without the ability to make any decisions by himself.
Well, if he's a middle manager, wouldn't he qualify for the exemption?
If he had the authority, yes. And here we have the four factors that we're looking at. The first factor, not at issue. There's no question that he was paid over the minimum salary requirement. The second element, again, it's thoroughly throughout there. He spent an appreciable portion of his time performing non-managerial tasks. And as HMS...
And the cases, of course, tell us that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter to an extent. It has to be a... the question is whether a significant portion of his job is managerial. And we would argue no. In fact, HMS noted through the deposition of Mike McNeary in his testimony that they didn't track what Troy did. So the testimony as to how Troy spent his time largely came from Troy. And his indication was that 80 or more percent was spent performing non-managerial tasks, cooking at Burger King, stocking shelves, waiting on customers, cleaning, unloading trucks. That is not what makes an exempt manager when you're spending 80% of your time doing that.
Is this in conjunction with the primary duty part of the four-part test?
Yes.
So just thinking a little bit abstractly, what is a primary duty? Does it have to be more than 50% of your work? And are there cases that guide us? Like if somebody, say, hypothetically, 25% of their work is managerial, could they have a primary duty satisfied?
They can. In fact, actually, there's a one of the federal regulations speaks to how to define primary duty, and it doesn't require that the majority or all of your time. It's where your primary focus lies.
Well, in fact, the regulation says in the disjunctive that one of the tests for primary duty is what is the most important duty that the employee performs. So I know you're an advocate, he's your client, but you're looking at what the most important thing that this guy did. Was it flipping burgers at the Burger King at the toll stop, or was it the management stuff, even if it was only 20%? What was the most important thing he did?
Based on the testimony in front of the court, and since they had to meet staffing requirements, I would argue that it was actually performing the hourly work. I understand that for the, in the grand scheme of things, for Host to be able to say that they had somebody supervising, they would argue it was clearly his primary duty was management. But when he's left with
He was in charge of the day-to-day operations of the toll stop, right?
To a very limited extent. Each of these...
Who was in charge of it if he wasn't? The guy that only came once a month?
More likely the... If you were asking who's truly in charge of each of the toll plazas, each of the three multi-unit managers who actually handled it, who set their own schedules, who set their own everything, who scheduled the people below them, those were the people that were in charge of the toll plazas.
But he was above them, correct?
Correct.
So if you say they were the managers and they would qualify, then how can he not be if he's their boss?
And I know this sounds crazy, but I think the facts on this one absolutely flesh that out. And I think there's an argument as to whether or not they would be exempt. There's a lot of testimony that they performed a lot of the same ministerial tasks as he had, but they also had much more supervisory authority. He simply lacked that authority. And
He wasn't their boss?
He was above them in the chain of command. I'm not sure I would say he was their boss. He didn't have the ability to set hours, set pay. The only one occasion where he had any impact on setting pay was, it's noted in the brief and noted even in the court's decision, was an email from Human Resources saying, hey, I don't think we should give this person the salary increase. And Troy's response was, okay. That was the only thing he did in order to set wages, salaries of those people directly below him.
Did he discipline them if they were doing something wrong?
The record's unclear on that one. There was one or two occasions where he had sought to do so and had been denied. There was, I believe, an occasion where he had been permitted to do so. As far as anything impactful, and this goes to the fourth factor, probably the most important factor here, he absolutely did not have the right to hire, fire, and when we're looking at whether or not weight was given to his opinions on those matter, it clearly was not. The most glaring example of this is...
Nothing on the record where he fired someone?
No, nothing on the record where he... No, sorry, when we're talking about firing people, I'm looking at the people for whom he is the direct report, because that's where the federal regulation says to focus. It's you look at the people for whom he is the direct report. And when you look...
Which are the three...
Yes, the three multi-unit managers, yes.
But he did fire to...
He was involved in the termination. I believe it was one of the assistant managers of one of the toll plazas, yes. So that would be multi-unit manager, assistant manager, so a couple levels below him.
So his views were solicited on employee discipline matters and in the selection of the three multi-unit managers, but it was that he just didn't get his particular people to get those three jobs.
Yes to your question, but not only that, it's not even that he didn't get his choice, it's that the statute, the exemption requires that his opinion be given particular weight. And the biggest example here is when we had the six toll plazas went down to, previously each had their own manager. They decided to consolidate, and there's a plaza on the north side and a south side, the turnpike at each stop. One manager was promoted to be in charge of each of the pairings. And so he went from having six people below him to having three. And in this process, there were three people involved. One was a representative from Human Resources, a woman named Jennifer Wallen. The next was a gentleman named Dan Sudlak. Dan is a manager of the other toll plazas in the state. He has nothing to do with the management oversight of Troy's six plazas. And Troy was the third vote. And on each one of those decisions, whether or not to promote employee A or employee B, Troy was overruled by a 2-to-1 vote. So it's human resources, somebody who has nothing to do with these plazas in Troy. And each vote was given equal weight. So it's really hard to say that his votes were given particular weight in this circumstance, because the only facts dealing with the people directly below him show that his vote never mattered in these situations. He went 0-for-3 on those, and at a later date, he sought to terminate one of the multi-unit managers. His recommendation to terminate was rejected. So it's clear that there's nothing to show that his vote was given particular weight with regard to those managers, the people for whom he was the direct report, as the regulation says it should be considered.
So if that one factor weighed in your favor, does that mean that the district court was wrong in granting summary judgment?
Absolutely. In fact, it goes a little beyond that. It's not only the court would be wrong in granting summary judgment, because the burden is on the employer to show the application of each of these factors. They must show that each one of these factors has been met in order to do it. It's their burden. Again, this is a summary judgment standard. And so this court has previously addressed a similar procedural posture. The case is Bacon versus Eaton. And when you modify the court's holding in that case to apply it here, the easiest way to say it would be, to survive the plaintiff's appeal, defendant must overcome the burden of showing that no reasonable jury could find that plaintiff lacked authority to hire, fire, or whose recommendations as to the hiring, firing, advancement, promotion, or other change of status was given particular weight. And yet, here, plaintiff has submitted substantial evidence that, if proven true, would show that he lacked such authority and therefore did not qualify for the exempt exception.
Your red light is
yes.
For a while.
So I'm going to resume my remaining time.
I want to ask one more question, if I may.
Yes.
So when we're talking about these mid-levels below him and the lower level, if we just use those two categories, did he regularly direct the lower level employees, sort of the line employees at these toll stops?
He did not.
Who did?
The person above them. So at one point,
was that person above them actually on the site at all times?
Typically, yes. There's about 7 levels of employee between Troy and the normal fry cook. They have, as it's in the deposition of Mike McNeary, where they go through and there's a ton of different levels of manager, assistant manager, food and beverage manager, but
right.
He didn't have that authority.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Dustin Dow, and I will be presenting the argument for the defendant appellee, HMS Host Toll Roads, well referred to as Host. My esteemed colleague here just referenced that, said, I know it sounds crazy. Indeed, that's because it is crazy to think that a district director of operations in charge of not just one toll plaza, but 6 separate toll plazas separated by dozens of miles would be anything but exempt. And indeed, Mr. Mantufo was exempt when you look at how the regulations apply. I'd like to pick up on a thread that you just ended with Mr. Timmers, and that is Mr. Mantufo's hiring and firing authority. Because, of course, he's correct, hiring and firing authority is one of the 4 requirements for the executive exemption. And it is the only one that Mr. Mantufo addresses in substance in the briefing on this appeal. Indeed, if you look at his reply brief, he doesn't even address Host's arguments on the other 3 factors. It is directly focused on this hiring and firing authority. So when you look at that exemption requirement, and this is, we lay it out on page 10 of our brief, the 4th component, the hiring and firing component. It says, if the other 3 components are met, the employee is executive exempt if the employee has authority to hire or fire other employees. I'm going to stop there. Because if the employee, period, has authority to hire or fire other employees, you can stop. You don't need to read the rest of that subsection.
So it's any employees?
Any employees.
It could be the line cook.
Any employee in the company, if Mr. Mantufel has authority to hire or fire any employee, period, you satisfy that prong.
So who now, does he have authority to hire and fire?
Great question. So we addressed that in our brief. Mr. Mantufel testified, yes, he participated in the interview process. He set up interviews. He directed his subordinate employees to conduct interviews. And he also hired and fired. And I'm going to direct you. So if you look on page 25 of our brief, we provide evidence where he hired employees. And Mr. Mantufel, by the way, testified that the thousands and thousands and thousands of emails that he sent that were a part of this record were all truthful and accurate, and not only truthful and accurate, accurately reflected what his job duties were. So on page 25 of our brief, you see a snapshot of an email that he sent. He writes, "Good morning, Stephanie. Hope all is well. I hired Barbara." Next line down. "Also, I already hired someone from the job fair today in Towpath." Towpath is one of the facilities. Same page. He's corresponding with an assistant manager, Joe Walls, who was two levels below Mr. Mantufel. And Joe Walls was asking for approval to hire someone. Mr. Mantufel writes to him, "That's fine," and he's hired as lead or supervisor.
He also, but as I understand it, your friend is arguing that he has to have the authority to hire and fire over direct reports, not these lower level employees that you're referring to. So what's your response to that?
There's no support for that in the law or the record. That's being made up. So what he's doing is he's looking at this.
There's a CFR, 541.105. "Generally, an executive's suggestions and recommendations must pertain to employees whom the executive customarily and regularly directs."
Sure. So this is why when I read subsection 4 of the executive exemption, I stopped before the word "or." Because the first part of the executive exemption regulation says, does the employee have authority to hire or fire? And then it says "or." So if the employee doesn't have authority to hire or fire, or whose suggestions or recommendations carry particular weight. You only get to that second half if the employee doesn't have the authority to hire or fire. So 541.
But hire or fire whom? Is it only direct reports or anybody?
The regulation says other employees, and there is no case anywhere that says an employee who has authority to hire or fire employees below him is not exempt simply because there's no evidence in the record that he actually hired or fired anyone directly below him. And that's not what the regulation says either. So
are we looking at 541.105? Is that the regulation that we should be looking at?
So 541.105 is the regulation that gives guidance on how to interpret the second part of 541.100A4.
So it's 100A4.
So 100A4, let me
work us through this.
Okay.
100A is talking about the four steps.
Four steps. And A4 is the hiring and firing authority step.
Okay. So A4 says who has the authority to hire or fire other employees, or whose suggestions and recommendations as to the hiring, are given particular weight.
Right. And so 541.105 provides guidance on the second half of that
particular
subsection
weight,
4.
Its title is particular weight.
And what that says is, so 541.105 says, generally an employee's recommendations and suggestions must pertain to the employee in question customarily and regularly directs. It does not say only pertains to the employees immediately below him. It's just the employees that he regularly directs. And Mr. Mantufel directed everyone at his plazas.
So the regulation, as I understand it, then fleshes out what the second part after the disjunctive is.
Correct.
Does the regulation at any point flesh out the first part where you said we should stop?
No.
Is there a regulation that pertains to that?
No, not that I'm aware of. Either the employee has authority to hire or fire, or it doesn't. And there's undisputed record in this case that he had authority to hire or fire. And I would suggest also, he had authority to hire or fire the multi-unit employees directly below him as well. He participated in the restructuring process.
But supposedly he had one of three votes.
Yes.
And his vote was outvoted by the others. So how could you say he has authority to hire or fire those three people when he wanted to hire A and instead B gets hired?
I would concede that this part goes more to the particular weight question. Okay.
So we have to go down to the line cooks and the people that you cited from page 25 of your brief where you had the vignettes from the record.
And assistant managers as well. So the assistant managers are two levels below him.
And he could hire or fire them.
And discipline them as well. That is correct.
And that's in the record.
That is in the record. I'll point to Joe Walls, who was an assistant manager two levels below him, who Mr. Mantuffel cited him in his brief. Well, Mr. Wall, Human Resources, it actually recommended to Mr. Mantuffel that he issue discipline to Mr. Walls that would have caused the change in job status for Mr. Walls. It'd be an adverse employment action. And Mr. Mantuffel testified that he reviewed the situation, looked at Joe Walls' performance, and decided independently, with his own authority, not to issue the discipline that Human Resources was recommending. Mr. Mantuffel testified that was his decision. Human Resources testified all they could do was make a recommendation, but it was his decision.
So hypothetically, and I know this is a hypothetical, if someone who has the ability to hire or fire one person, but generally is not the one to do that, is that enough to qualify for the exemption under this factor?
Yeah.
And basically what you're saying is that any of these people involved in your multi-layer situation would qualify under this fourth factor for the executive exemption.
Yes, I am. And to answer your question, I would say this. And Mr. Timmers suggested that it's the multi-unit managers who are really running these facilities and it's not Mr. Mantuffel. And that's because that's how Mr. Mantuffel set the policy for these facilities. So if he has authority to hire or fire anyone who reports up to him. And if he doesn't exercise that authority, but instead delegates it to the multi-unit managers and the assistant managers who report to the multi-unit managers, that doesn't somehow make Mr. Mantuffel non-exempt. He's using his authority he concedes. He's responsible for the operations at all of these facilities. He decides where he goes each day. He decides which employees he evaluates each
day. So that really takes us back to the second factor, whose primary duty is management of the enterprise. And he says that he spends, let's say, 80% of his time being a short order cook or emptying the boxes at these various places because there are staffing problems. So how could it be that his primary duty is management if, in fact, he is running around filling in for missing employees?
Well, his primary duty is management pursuant to this court's case law as well as the regulations that govern what the primary duty of management means. What it means is, regardless of whether you're spending more than 50% of your time or not performing what would otherwise be non-exempt work, if you are the person in charge, responsible for the operational success of the facility, responsible for setting schedules or delegating how schedules will be set, responsible for food costs, labor costs, then you meet the primary duty test. And that's what this court held in the Thomas case. The Thomas case was 2007, involved a gas station manager of a single location. She performed non-exempt work because she was there running the cash register, checking out customers. But this court said, overwhelmingly, her primary duty is management because she's the one responsible for setting schedules, hiring, firing, making sure stuff is ordered on time. 100% of the time that she was there, her primary duty was management. Regardless of whether Mr. Mantufo was at one location or another, if he was at location A, he's still responsible for the other five locations 100% of the time. And I'll also say that the record in this case includes tens of thousands of emails that he was sending reflecting a primary duty of management. That the only evidence that he was performing non-exempt work as much as he says he was his own testimony, which obviously, even assuming that it's true, he still remained responsible for the operations of these facilities.
Why isn't there a jury question on if we're focusing on what is his primary duty? Why isn't that open for a jury to determine, as opposed to our saying no reasonable jury could decide in his favor?
Here's why, Judge Moore. We address this on roughly pages 12 to 18 of our brief, where we include all the admissions that Mr. Mantufo made concerning what the management work was that he performed. And it is overwhelming, and it is extensive, and it is nonstop in terms of the managerial work that he was doing. He was negotiating host relationships with Starbucks. He was the chief problem solver between host and the Ohio Turnpike Commission when the Ohio Turnpike Commission had issues coming up at the plazas. Mr. Mantufo was the person who decided how to staff these locations within the budget provided. He was the person who directed the employees how to manage their labor costs. He was the person who told the multi-unit managers, here's how you need to be doing things. Mr. Mantufo was the person responsible for employee safety, and this is...
What Mr. Timmer seems to be arguing is that it's really the multi-unit managers that were the managers here. In your review of the regulations in all of these cases, have you found any cases where somebody above the manager is not a manager?
Judge McKeague, I promise you, we looked high and low for that situation. We have never found a single case where someone who was above an exempt employee was found to be non-exempt, either as a matter of summary judgment or a jury. I've never even seen a case brought in that respect.
But there hasn't been a finding that the people just below him were exempt or were not exempt. We're just talking in the abstract about whether they should be considered to be exempt employees, these multi-unit managers.
Sure. It's never been challenged.
But there hasn't been a finding, but Manifel is contending that they were the managers.
Correct. Who reported to him, and he had the discretion to decide.
So your argument is if he concedes they're the managers, then he's above them, they report to him, i.e., he's the manager.
Yes. I see my time is up. I ask that you affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you.
Occasionally, we actually try to employ logic when we're deciding cases. Why would that last exchange not be reflective of it? This just seems so simple here.
So, as Judge Moore noted, that there's never been a finding as that anybody here is an exempt or non-exempt employee. In fact, in this particular case, it's rather an odd circumstance. One of the people below Mr. Mantufo, I believe it was Joseph Walls, had previously, as an assistant manager, had previously sued HMS and been found to be a non-exempt employee under a Fair Labor Standards claim. So there's absolutely nothing showing that the people below him are exempt, because if you look two levels down, there's been a determination that person was, the assistant manager, was absolutely not exempt.
So if, I get that, but if Manifel is not a manager, who was the manager? The multi-unit employee?
No. The record's unclear on that one, actually, because manager isn't just, you don't look at the corporate hierarchy to determine who a manager is, at least for the Fair Labor Standards exemption. We have to look at each of the factors in every case. So you may have a situation where you have an employee who is exempt, but their manager may or may not be. I know it seems logically awkward.
Did you find any cases?
I did not.
That says that.
I did not. And it's a fact pattern in each case. Each case would be fact specific. So the question's always going to be, does this person meet the standards? There are four things that must be met.
So why, when we look at these thousands of emails, is not the almost predetermined answer that seems to reflect management?
Because as Judge Moore had noted earlier, again, this is a question for the jury. There's information, there's absolutely some things showing.
Why would a reasonable jury be able to conclude that he was not managing if they actually read all those emails?
Because there was a good amount of testimony from Mike McDeary, who noted that so this is Troy's supervisor, this is Mantufel's supervisor, who noted that the district directors of operations, so Troy and Dan Sedlak, lacked authority to do certain things, that most decisions either had to go through him or through human resources. There's testimony from Dan Sedlak, the other district director of operations, who noted the same thing, noted that, again, he also had difficulties trying to fire or hire employees, that he also lacked certain authority, that most of these decisions went up, and most notably from Troy Mantufel himself. There is ample evidence in the record to show that while he did have, again, some supervisory, some managerial authority, the question is going to be primary duty, and there's information on both sides. There's enough that a reasonable jury could look at this and say he was an exempt employee. I'm not disputing that. But there's also enough in this record for a reasonable jury to look at this set of facts and say, I don't think he had supervisory authority. I don't think he was managerial. I don't think he had authority to hire and fire. I don't think he actually managed employees. Again, this is a summary judgment standard where the employer bears the burden of showing each element. So is there a set of facts on which a reasonable jury could decide in favor of HMS Host? Absolutely.
Just out of curiosity, how much is at stake here?
The testimony shows that he worked on average about 80 or more hours per week. Annual salary was $80,000, I believe. So I don't remember the exact numbers offhand. It's over $100,000, I think, under three. So I don't remember the precise number offhand.
Because this is a claim for overtime.
Correct. And so appellee's counsel had said that Troy had the undisputed ability to hire and fire. And again, that's simply not true. They point to a single example or a couple of examples, but the
how many examples would they need to show that he had that authority?
The breadth of the record shows the opposite. Anytime Troy had to make a decision, it had to go to somebody else. It would say, hey, this person did something wrong. You know, what should we do here? You know, he'd talk to Mike McBeary, his supervisor. He would talk to human resources. And
well, the fact that you have to consult human resources is not indicative of whether you do or don't have authority. That's just the real world with
absolutely.
Human resources. But he gave us an example of where human resources wanted somebody disciplined. He decided not to. So why is it, did that not happen?
Well, that would actually go, if we're talking about discipline, we're looking at the clearly under what's going to fall under the particular weight regulation. Because the hire and fire, if you accept the appellee's argument that hire and fire can be anybody regardless of what the regulation says, very clearly the regulation would apply on the particular weight to direct reports. That person was not a direct report. So I see that my time has run. If there are no further questions.
Thank you. Thank you both for your argument. The case will be submitted.